from that place, failure is impossible. Whatever step you take, whatever happens as a result of that step, which we've called the lightning path, it can never be wrong.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Live Into Your Brilliance podcast, the place where we shine a light on the innate brilliance of human beings and have fun blowing up illusions that get in our way. As always, I'm joined by Mark Billows-Bilby, and I'm delighted to say he's in the UK. He's not quite in the same room as me yet, but he's getting closer, so he will be for next week. Billows, welcome as always. How are you, my friend, and where are you today?
Hello, my friend. Nice to be with you. Today, I am in beautiful Buckinghamshire, and I am at the De Vere Latimer Estate, which is a gorgeous property just outside Chesham, and is the seat of the Barons of Chesham, which has now been a Latimer House has now been turned into a conference center and meeting place and restaurant and all that good stuff. But it's I was fascinated, actually. I was just, because of, you know, I'm always curious about these beautiful old British buildings, and fascinated to learn that this place was a hive of secret activity during the Second World War. And MI5 and MI6, the British intelligence services, used to have prisoners of war here. And what they did was they secretly recorded the conversations between the prisoners. And some of Hitler's generals were imprisoned here, and they secretly recorded over 10,000 conversations, which resulted in, you know, hundreds of thousands of pages of transcripts, which are now in the National Archives. And they learned all sorts of crazy things because the prisoners didn't realize they were being recorded. And so they learned all sorts of secrets about the Nazi war plans. And it's now being sort of positioned as formidable, or on a par, I should say, with what went on at Bletchley House with the Enigma code breakers, and so it's pretty cool. I'm here in this grand old British pile, and just enjoying the adventure, and actually just being on sort of stage doing a panel discussion about our journey through Mimecast. Me and Pete Bauer were invited to come and address a room of 140 people and talk about our adventure. So it's been a busy old day, my friend.
Wow, I wouldn't have minded being in a room to hear what version of the story you told. That would have been fun. And gosh, isn't that amazing? I'm just looking at you, those walls behind you, thinking if walls could talk, you know, you don't even realize you'd look around the country now and then, you know, it's hard to believe that because it's relatively recent history when you think about it. And yet, you know, you'd never know unless you went looking. And then you find out that, which is shows the value of a curious mind as well, I guess. Yeah. Should we dive in?
What question has come up this week?
Yep. So today we have a question from one of our listeners, a lady called Mia. And Mia has asked this, which is, in what ways can we leverage our failures and setbacks as stepping stones for growth and development? Do you have any strategies to reframe our approach to failure so that we can benefit more both personally and professionally?
Wow. Well, first of all, thanks, Mia, for your question. That's an awesome one. It's funny. I've literally just been on this panel discussion with Pete, and one of the questions that was posed by one of the attendees was, what were some of your biggest mistakes and how did you learn from them? And, you know, and Pete gave a very eloquent answer, and he went into quite a detailed explanation of some of the mistakes that he felt he had made, and one in particular, which I won't talk about because we're going to have Pete on the show at some point, and he's got a whole host of stories to tell, and I'm sure that'll be one of them. So I won't ruin the surprise. But my response to that was, and it's always 20/20 vision in hindsight, but my response was, I don't like to think of things as mistakes. And so to Mia's kind of question about, you know, reframing things, I think that in a sort of true world of non-duality, they are just experiments. They are just things that we do as we go through life. And the secret for me is to keep experimenting boldly, and then learn from the experiments. And so it's an important thing that I've come to see, because I think, like most people, I sort of, you know, was quite conscious of the concept of making mistakes, and whether it was professionally or privately in my personal life. But the more I've come to appreciate the non-duality of it all, the more I just love the concept that there's no right or wrong. There's no such thing as, like, you know, mistakes and successes. There's just constant experimentation. And then it's what you do with that experimentation. When you put it into the lab of life, what do you see and where do you go from there? And I just love that concept. And so the way I answered it for this, from the panel perspective, you know, this was obviously a professional thing. And I just said, you know, I would encourage you to not think about them as failures and mistakes, but rather as really valuable experiments. And when you approach it from that perspective, you cease approaching it from a place of fear, and you approach it from a place of curiosity, because you're forced to, you know, kind of like a mad scientist in a laboratory, you're forced to ask the question, what did we learn? Like, what happened? What did we learn? Do we have to tweak the recipe, or did we achieve what we ultimately wanted to achieve? And if we did, like, where do we go next? And so that's the first thing that just kind of popped into my brain off the back of Mia's question.
Mm. Yeah. No, and I dig where you've taken us as well, because I share that belief, and the illusion's really compelling though, isn't it? It's like you say, like hindsight's 20/20 vision. And I think that's where, like, failure in many ways is the illusion. And because it looks like we must have got it wrong. And I think that's the little trap. It's the judgment factor of, I got it wrong, you got it wrong, we got it wrong. And there was some way that we could have known to do something differently, which means we could have got it right. And so there's that, the illusion is good, bad, right, wrong, success, failure. And I think it's, part of it has been able to kind of look at that and go and really get curious about the truth in it. Because to your point, you run experiments, and the nature of an experiment is sometimes they work out the way that you are hoping they might do. Sometimes they don't. And sometimes they work out in wonderful ways that you had no idea. You know, it's where we get post-it notes from, is a failed experiment. To create glue. And it's like, oh, this doesn't work very well as a glue, but actually it works really well as something else. And so, you know, so from failure can come the most amazing innovation. But I wanted to come back because I think that's, it's that illusion and the judgment that's hard to let go of, because when we do look back with 20/20 vision, and actually even that, I'm wondering, is that true? Is hindsight 20/20 vision, Or is hindsight just our interpretation? You know, because we kind of hold it up as this thing of like, well, hindsight's 20/20 vision, and now we can see because we're looking back. And it's like, well, no, you see what you see. And it's, you know, you and I could both be looking back. That's why I was saying I was really curious about what you and Pete would have been talking about today. Because I know if I was sat in the audience, I would have heard something new and fresh. I just know I would have heard something new and fresh. And I was there for 10 years of it. And yet still, you can hear someone's reflections and be like, oh, wow. And so I think the 20/20 vision is that we can have insights when we look back. But those insights are not about the past. They're an insight for now. And they're meant for the future. So you look in the past, and for me, this is the place that I go to, which is everyone is always doing their absolute best based on what they see to be true in the moment. And if you can really see that, then there is no way that anyone can possibly be getting it wrong. And yet it doesn't mean that our behaviors always make sense. It doesn't mean that our decisions will always work out. It just means that in that moment, that was the thing that looked like the best thing to do or path to follow. And then it leads where it leads. And we look back and we may have an insight in the moment. And the question becomes whether we use that insight to judge ourselves or we use that insight to cultivate the next step forward. So it's like, oh, I no longer see things that way. That's really useful. I'm not going to judge an old version of me for not seeing it that way because he couldn't have, you know, I can actually be grateful to a past version of me who was prepared to experiment all out such that I can have the gift of this insight now. And now my opportunity is to use this insight in this moment because that's in service of future me who's going to see even more as a result of me doing this. And it makes me think of, do you know the basketball player? I think is it Gianni or Giannis? It plays for the Milwaukee Bucks. He's one of the...
Yeah.
There's an amazing documentary about him on Amazon Prime that I recommend everyone watch. It was so cool. But there's a clip which I had on that, which I'd also seen on Instagram. And I think it was either the year after they'd won the championship for the first time or the year following. And they've been knocked out in the playoffs again. And a reporter asks him, you know, given that you have lost this game, is your season a failure? And his answer is incredible because at first he starts, and you know, it's even really interesting. You can see him catching himself becoming a fist because he starts to react and then he goes, hang on, I don't want to make this personal. So let me, and you can see him get really centered again. He goes, you asked this question last year. And now he said, I wasn't in a place to answer it as well as I'm about to do now. But he said, you've asked it again and I don't want to make this personal. But he said, you go to your work every year, every day, and you go to your work every year, and you probably set yourself goals. And he said, like, if you don't get the promotion or the pay rise or whatever it is at the end of that year, does that mean your year has been a failure? And he actually says to the reporter, no, I want you to answer me. And you can't hear the reporter, but the reporter clearly says, no. And he's like, exactly. Exactly. He said, in sport, you come out, and you do your best, and sometimes you win, and sometimes you don't. But he said, every moment is a step to success. So he said, the 50 years that the Milwaukee Bucks didn't win a championship, were they 50 years of failure? No, they were 50 steps to success. And he said, so that's just the nature of, I can't remember where he went from there. And I just thought, wow, like there's a, you know, to me his question, there's a powerful reframe right there. Is something that doesn't work out, is it a failure or is it just another step to success? Did Edison see his 999 attempts to create a light bulb as failures or were they ultimately 999 steps to success? So that's kind of where I go on this. Yeah. And that would be, that's what comes up for me.
Well, it's amazing. Like, there's a lot there, and a lot of threads to potentially pull on. I think the most obvious one that jumps out is this concept of resilience. You know, like so in the case of Gianni and the Bucks persevering as long as they did in order to achieve the success, the championship success that they did, or that, you know, that wonderful example of Edison. You know, I think a lot of people know that story of how he persevered and ran literally 1,000 experiments before he was able to create the light bulb. And I think there are lots of examples of you know, wonderful examples throughout history, of you know, like people that we revere. You know, like, I mean, can you imagine if, like, Michael Jordan, when he was cut from his high school team, if he had said, okay, well, I'm never playing basketball? Or I was reading another one. Steven Spielberg was rejected from film school 3 times. I mean, it's just like this crazy, crazy stories out there around resilience. And I think this whole concept of, and I love the way you framed it there, but, you know, if you see the rejection or the failure or the mistake as a wonderful step towards success, it's you know, that moment of learning towards success, then you develop this wonderful sense of resilience, because it's like, well, I'm never giving up. You know, I mean, you know, I was trying to think of another example that I heard recently. There's obviously, I think I've mentioned it before, the wonderful story of Jose Hernandez, who was the son of itinerant or migrant crop pickers in Southern California, farm laborers from Mexico. And, you know, and his parents impressed upon him the importance of working hard at school. But he wanted to be an astronaut. And so he wrote a letter to NASA and said, hey, here I am, want to be an astronaut. They were like, thanks, but no thanks. So he wrote another one, same thing, thanks, but no thanks. So, and he kept sort of improving himself. I mean, you know, this is a guy who became a successful engineer, and, you know, in his own mind, he had all the credentials, and he kept trying to improve himself, and each rejection, rather than have it knock him down and have him throw his hands up and give up, he was like, it fired him on to the next step. And eventually, after the 12th letter, he was accepted into the program. And by then he had figured out, you know, like, because the rejections had fueled him, and he'd figured out, okay, I need to go and do my master's scuba diver. I have to become a pilot. Like, there's certain things that they look for. But he figured that out because he used those rejections, those failures, as fuel for his layered success. And it was absolutely incredible. And I wish I could remember the other example of somebody who wrote, you know, like 100 letters. And I think it's a famous, probably like John Grisham or somebody, but, you know, his first book was rejected so many times despite all of the letters and editors that he approached. But can you imagine how easy it would have been for him to go back to just being a lawyer because of that failure? But it just fueled his layered approach to success. And that resilience is, and we experience it in work very often. And I think it's the most stark example of it, you know, particularly when you're starting a business and you're an entrepreneur, and like the journey we went on, there were so many occasions where it would have been very easy for us to, you know, to feel dejected, and feel like we had made mistakes and failed, and berate ourselves and judge ourselves, but we didn't. We had this wonderful love of adventure. We would experiment. We would win some days, and those were amazing. And we'd end up in some pub in London and have a pint, which was fantastic. And we'd high five. And then there were days where we went back and we were like, damn, what went wrong in the lab? Let's correct from there. And it made us super, super resilient. And it's funny, you know, because it sneaks up on you. This is the interesting thing about, and again, reframing to Mia's question, it sneaks up on you. So you don't realize what is actually happening, but at some point you encounter something and you suddenly realize you are far more resilient than you ever gave yourself credit for. And you're able to face supposed failures or hardships or mistakes or things that go wrong in the world with incredible amounts of empathy, courage, love, whatever it is, because you've got this layered skin, this shell of resilience, and it all comes from that reframing, I think. And I think people who don't do it, I think people really struggle. Those are people who are like, they dwell in the self-judgment as opposed to reveling in the curiosity.
I may want to come back to something you said there about our time in the workplace together, just because it made me smile. Well, actually, I'll say it first because it made me smile. We did a lot of self-judgment and a lot of berating, and we stayed in. And then I kind of want to put that there because, like, I think that's, now I look back on that and go, oh, that was like low moods. Low moods are going to show up. Like, sometimes self-judgment will creep in the door, and it always comes back to the choice as to what you do with it. And everything you said was true. It's just, I was just thinking, oh yeah, no, actually. And it's the question of whether you allow yourself to dwell there or you make the choice to move back forward again. Because I think that is, within that is the resilience. And then reminded me of something, and I'm going to butcher this because I don't know the exact details, but there was an experiment run in, I'm pretty sure it was in Arizona, and you might know this, you might know of this, where they built a biosphere because they wanted to test whether or not they could replicate, fertile conditions. Essentially in outer space. I believe that was like what they were trying to do, was to see, can they create an artificial biosphere within which they could have a fertile growth and conditions for human beings. And pretty much, of loads of the experiment, they were worked perfectly and they were able to replicate conditions. And they're basically out in the middle of the desert. But one of the things they couldn't get their head around for a while was the fact that the trees just kept falling over. And the reason that the trees kept falling over was because the one thing they hadn't replicated wind. And the trees needed wind. They needed strain to go onto the trees in order for them to grow roots. And they would grow really deep roots, and that's what keeps the trees stood up straight and strong. It's not, the roots were formed as a result of wind and storms. And I see setbacks and mistakes now. I like the wind. You know, if it was just all sun in our backs and everything else, we wouldn't be as resilient as we are. Like, those things are, they're gifts. And as I say that, I'm sure someone listening is like, yeah, whatever, that is kind of Pollyanna bullshit. And I can understand why they might think that, because when you're in the midst of it, there is no part of you that is necessarily seeing it as a gift. You know, Man City got knocked out of the Champions League last night, as did Arsenal. And that's going to hurt. You know, it's going to sting. The question will be how they respond, you know, another step to success or a sign for them to get off the bus. And I think there is an interpretation there. And so I wanted to put that on the table because we can start to see that our, you know, it's that question of if we see that life is happening for us, then it's all happening for us. And so even the moments when it looks like we are in the midst of failure, it's like, oh, this is making me stronger. And why I think that's important is because when we use the term resilience, like the question for me that arises, what's the nature of resilience? And what is it built on? Or where does it come from? Because I think if we can tap into that, we can start to be, then when something shows up, we've kind of already, we've laid track for ourselves to be the way we would love to be when faced with adversity, setbacks, perceived failures. So I'd love to know what your perspective is on that. On if someone said to you, what's the nature then of resilience and how do you cultivate it through practice in such a way that you know when the time comes, you'll be able to tap back into it and have faith in what you've built?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's one that I'm going to fumble my way through because I don't articulate this as clearly as some of the thinkers out there. But I think for a lot of us, you know, it's not unusual for human beings to encounter what they perceive as failures, right? So just kind of follow the bouncing ball here a bit and you can keep me honest. But as human beings, we perceive these failures, right? We berate ourselves for making these mistakes and we judge ourselves for making these mistakes. And we convince ourselves that life is full of disappointment in ourselves, disappointment in others, and basically life sucks. And then at some point some people are like, fuck that. Like, I'm going in pursuit of happiness. I'm going in pursuit of peace, like peace in my mind. And so they go off on their journey. And we, you know, we've mentioned this many times, like the illusion of the journey. So they go off on this journey and they become Buddhists or they study the Bhagavad Gita and the Gita, sorry. They become Zen. They become Christian. They become devout Muslims. Whatever it is, like whatever your flavor is. And they go on this journey and they spend hours studying. And they keep searching and they keep searching and they're like, fuck, I'm going to get there. Like, just got to keep pursuing it. And then they don't. And then the disappointment is overwhelming because they don't reach the spot where they have this ability to not live in this fear of failure. But all along, and this is what you and I have been telling the listener, all along they had everything they needed to exist from a place of peace and a place of quiet, and it's their awareness of just being. And so when you think about what is failure, well, it's us, the me judging my interaction with the world, right? But when we collapse those two and we are just the one thing, we are just our awareness, we are just being, it's impossible for those two to exist. The duality of that doesn't exist anymore. It's just us. It's just. And so from that place of awareness, of just being, you can't fail. You can't make mistakes. You can only experiment and delight in the joy of the experiment. It's and that's how I and that's why, like, resilience is in my mind, resilience is the ability to go back there instantly. When you're able to collapse those things and you're able to, despite what's happening in the world and what's happening in the mind of the me and the identity of the me and the challenging of the me, when that is swept aside by an anchoring in just the awareness in the being, then you are as resilient as you always were.
As part of me thinks someone's head might have just exploded. And I love where you've gone, because that's what I was thinking. Like, resilience is such an interesting thing, because, like, when we talk about it in the me context, it's like we have to build resiliency so that we can endure the failures. When we're coming from the I, it's like, what failure? In what endurance? This is it. And like you say, it collapses in and on itself, which I just love that way. It collapses in and on itself. And so, you know, success and failure is a product of the egoic mind. Like, it's made up. You know, it's probably been a really useful construct for us as a species to, like, we created it and it's served an amazing purpose, because it's puts us into this experimentation mindset, and it makes us want to test things and to push things, and so what an incredible construct. And like all our thought-created constructs, sometimes we just misuse them, and we apply a meaning to it, which was never the intention, you know, of wherever it came forth from. It's like, no, when we see that we've constructed it as a means of serving us, then that's great. When we turn it into something to abuse ourselves with, then that's not so cool. And there's the subtle twist. And I think that when we come back to, oh, well, I'm making all of this up anyway. And none of it really matters. And I'm not saying that it doesn't matter in the sense of, yeah, like, we want to get out, we want to play the game, and it doesn't matter. It's a total paradox. It's like, listen, for the vast majority of things, when you're coming to the end of this mortal journey, and who knows what happens after it, chances are there are very few moments of success or failure you're going to be really being bothered about at that point in time. And so, yeah, I love when you've taken us, and I love that idea of coming home. It's like, if you are lost to the idea that failure matters, that means you're very much in the me. And that's the signal to come back to the I and to come back to this present moment and know that you are good. And the reason that you know you're good is because you're still here. And so if you're still here, everything's as it always was, and you continue to be and experience from there until you're not here. And then you'll know more about whatever that means. But that's the simple truth. And that is where it all comes from. Because if someone goes, well, how do you know that's true? It's because I'm still here. Turns out, like, no matter what I've done so far, I'm still here. So are you. And if you're listening to this, so are you. And you've done pretty well so far.
I love that. But I think, you know, for the listener, and hopefully for Mia, the really good news here is, you know, when we and you know, human beings love doing this, they love sort of calibrating against other human beings. You know, the me is insecure and arrogant and egotistical all in one, and paranoid and insecure. And so you look at history and you look at these remarkable human beings. So like, you know, Mandela or Gandhi or Martin Luther King or, you know, any of these amazing characters that we often rattle off, and you go, oh my God, you know, even like a Steve Jobs, like whether you loved or hated the man, like everybody's like, oh my God, he had such resilience. You know, they had this remarkable resilience, like Mother Teresa, like to do what she did in Calcutta and live in that diabolical place with people dying around them and disease and amputations and you name it, dysentery. Like they must have had incredible resilience. Like, are you born with that, or how do you cultivate that? Like, if we could like bottle that stuff, then we would have the answer for great leadership or leading great lives. Like, how do we bottle that? Like, how do we cultivate that? What training program can we go on to achieve that resilience? And you're like, fuck me. Like, that sounds exhausting. It sounds horrible. And the good news for all the lazy listeners out there who, like me, don't want to go on that journey, thanks very much. The wonderful news is we have it already. Because when you do come home and you relish being and you operate from your awareness rather than the noise in your head, you have as much resilience as Nelson Mandela or Mother Teresa. Because we're all divine energy in form with exactly the same makeup, with exactly the same wonderful apps. And it's like, that's great news. And I love that news because I'm fucking lazy and I don't see myself trotting off to a retreat in the Himalayas to try and figure this stuff out. But I do like the fact that I can experience it firsthand, because I do experience it firsthand. Like, I'm able to be super resilient because I operate from that place of awareness and I'm content being when shit gets real. And I try to operate from there. Now, do I do it all the time? No. Do I still get tangled up in the ropes of the me and the ego and the identity and the injustice of it all? For sure. But I can come back to, as I practice more and as I see it more clearly, I can come back to that being and I have exactly what those remarkable human beings had.
Yep. Well, yeah, I don't know. I think that last point is important. It's, you know, people will talk about bounce back ability, and I hear that slightly differently now through your words as well. It's just the speed with which we kind of get over our thinking and come back home to ourselves. So it's like, you know, you use the term shit gets real. Shit gets real for everybody. Like, we're not saying that if you're coming from this place or if you have this perspective, you won't experience setbacks and you won't have things that go in the opposite direction to how you want them, that you won't lose out on deals or wins or, you know, like all of that's going to happen. Shit's going to get real. And as best we can, we're pointing towards, and what we've experienced is that the more you see that that is all made up, the more you see it from the eye, and the more you're in the practice of doing that, the shorter and shorter the windows are within which you are experiencing the feeling of being lost. You know, it's like you kind of come back and you go, oh, hang on, I know what this is. And I know that you kind of come back to the deeper truth, and then things just feel a bit easier. That's my experience always of it, is like the window of being lost is not particularly enjoyable ever. Like I've never found the experience of being lost to my thoughts, which are unhelpful, enjoyable. And yet the experience of coming back is one where even now it's like, ah, like of ease, of a sense of relief and a sense of letting go. And then I always find that like there's a very small and obvious next step to be taken in life. It's like, just becomes a bit simpler. It's like, oh, okay, I'll just do that. And there's a real peace for me in the simplicity of knowing that like that's when I come back home out of my thoughts of, in this case, let's say of failure and judgment of self, that when I am back home, everything is much simpler. Like there's not a lot to be done. You know, there's no big undertaking to fix anything. And I'll tell you like an example I had this week personally, where I was on a call with my business partner and another colleague. And in that call, without going into the detail of it, like I did lose my composure. I guess that's how I described it and would describe it. I got annoyed and pissed off, and I felt like, you know, in this case, this just wasn't going the way I think it should have gone. And the call finished. Like I just stopped talking, and I had a face like a slapped arse, you know, because I was properly like, oh, fuck you, and da-da-da in my head. I got off the call, and that's fine. And I went to bed, and I was curious whether I was going to sleep because I was wound up. And I woke up the next morning, I took the dog for a walk. And then as I just started to settle down and be like, oh, hang on, what's really at play here? And things had to happen and things had been said. And I was like, well, what's really at play is you've gone off home base. And that's the reason you're having this experience, not because of anything else. And in that moment, I thought, oh, just send them a message. Two people, just send them a message. And I did. I sent them both a message, and I just said, really sorry about my behavior last night. I said, I just went up into my head, and I'm not making an excuse. That's what happened, and I wanted you to know that. I apologize. I still have a difference of opinion, but I... there's like, it's fine. We can talk about that whenever. And as soon as I did that, like I felt clean and clear. And then we've ended up having like a couple of the most brilliant conversations. And the only reason I share that, it's not like, oh, big up me, because in one sense, like I've just been, in my mind, I've been a bit of a dick. But by A, being okay with that, and B, just coming back home rather than in like, I messed that up or I got that wrong, but just coming back home. And just thinking, what's the next thing to do? Just apologize. Just apologize. And by taking that step, everything just carried on. And I think there's so much, for me anyway, I really rested in that of both, number one, I only have to really worry about myself and my behaviors and anything, whether it's in this idea of success or failure or anything else. And just two, on that, you know, you come back home, and when you're home, there will be something that you know to do. There'll be, the next thing will just show itself to you. And then just do that. And, you know, if you're Mia and you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, like, what's the, you know, what's a positive, what's a reframe or a way of moving forward? That would be the thing I would be offer, is that when you, even if something hasn't worked out the way you are, the way you'd like it to, if you can, as best you can, just allow yourself to settle down and let go of any idea of self-judgment and know that it's okay, and just be curious with the question of like, oh, what's the simple next step that's showing itself to me? Not that I need to find, but that's showing itself to me. And then move in that direction. And you'll just step back. It'll put you back into the flow versus off the sidelines. You'll be back in the game versus taking yourself off to the side to ruminate on whatever you think might be going on. And ruminating's always a terrible idea.
And I would add to that, because I think you articulated that so beautifully. And from that place, failure is impossible. Which is a wonderful thing that you see, because you know, whatever step you take, whatever happens as a result of that step, which we've called the lightning path, it can never be wrong. It only ever just is. And that is, you know, free of judgment, free of all that nonsense. It's just the next step. And so there's no right or wrong, there just is, because you're operating from that place of being and awareness. And so, like, I take great comfort in that. And it's wonderful, because and I think you use the word delight. Like it you do start to delight, because you know, and we've said this many times, and some of our listeners and some of our guests have spoken about this. You have these moments of delight, which you just see so clearly, and they just come one after the other as you go down that road. And it's pretty amazing stuff. It's pretty cool. And it can be very subtle. Like, it doesn't have to be, like we've said this before, I think we said it last week, like it doesn't have to be like unicorns and rainbows. You know, you can still delight going through hell. And it's, but because you're coming from that place, there are no failures, no mistakes. It's just being, and that's, I find that very comforting. And it's, like we said, it's just so not exhausting. It's just so liberating. You just have this different energy, this different peace and calm, and you find a way through.
Yeah, I think I don't want to add to that. I think that's a really lovely place for us to bring this episode to a conclusion, because I just love that idea of it always coming back to that delight is an offer. You know, it's just a beautiful place to kind of bring everything back to, because it's true. Any bumper sticker come to mind for you?
My bumper sticker for this episode is, when you think about it, failure is always an option.
Yeah, it's perfect. I can imagine that so many, if that was on a bumper sticker, just cars crashing everywhere as people like going like, what the fuck? What does that mean? I'm getting totally lost. I have a little, you made me, as you were saying that, for some reason, I thought about a post that I saw on Facebook today. And I'll just say it to you. It's nothing really to do with what we're talking about, but it might be a fun way just to end this episode. There were 30 cows in a field and 28 chickens. How many didn't?
10.
Yeah. Well done.
I had to think about it, though. I had to think about it. I had to play that through. Oh, that's good. I like that one.
Anyway,
nice one.
There you go. It was a funny one. It was about listening as well. So you've nailed it. You owned that. Mate, thank you for this. It's been a cool conversation. Thank you, Mia, for a super question. Really got the juices going. Really hope that you found something in the discussion and would love your feedback on anything that you do here. And actually, I'll share something about a bit of feedback we got from a prior question in a future episode as well, which was cool to hear this week. Billows, any final comments from you?
No, as always, thanks, Mia. Awesome question. I hope that this got the old gray matter going and you saw something. And sorry if following the bouncing ball sometimes was a bit tricky. But no, I had a lot of fun and I love these explorations. So thank you very much.
All right, folks. Well, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks for tuning in again and sending you lots of love for your day and week ahead, and look forward to being with you again next week. Until then, keep living into your brilliance. Thank you for joining us on this enlightening journey, unraveling the innate brilliance within every human being. We hope today's episode has sparked new thoughts and inspired fresh perspectives. Remember, the power to shatter illusions and unleash your true potential lies within you. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite platform. If you'd like more insights and daily doses of inspiration, you can follow me on Instagram at @AlKennyCoaching. Or you can connect with myself and Mark on LinkedIn, where we will share articles and perspectives about unlocking your innate brilliance. Remember, you are capable of extraordinary things. Keep believing, keep exploring, and keep shining brightly. Take care and stay brilliant.